The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. I'm so glad you could join me on the program Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It is, of course, the program where we typically take your calls and answer your questions about the things you care the most about, questions about God and the historical Jesus, questions about the Bible, questions about worldviews and world religions. We talk about the past, and sometimes we talk about the future. And speaking about an investment in the future, joining me is Mike DeBoer. He's the executive director at Camp Idra Haji. And we've had a great partnership with Camp Idra Haji over the years. Mike DeBoer, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Gino.
Well, you are welcome. And, of course, you've been the executive director of Camp Idra Haji since 2010. And I guess before we even continue, we might as well ask you, for people who are listening, they go, Idra Haji, that's kind of an odd name. What in the world does that mean? And so let's ask the obvious question. What does Camp Idra Haji mean?
Yeah, it's a great question. Idra Haji started in 1948, and the founder, he and his wife, their favorite hymn was, I'd Rather Have Jesus.
Wow.
And so they shortened that down, took the first letters of those words and said, let's call our camp Idra Haji because we want all kids to come here and rather have Jesus than anything.
Wow. You know, and one of the things about camp, my pastor was a guy named Chuck Smith. He was a very famous pastor, and he got saved at a Christian camp. And for him, camp was the place where you go to meet Jesus. And so in his world, he saw camp not just as a place for fun, and it is fun, but at a place where people can hear about Jesus and get to know Jesus. Talk a little bit about Camp Idra Haji's, well, mission.
Yeah. Our mission as a ministry, obviously, is to incorporate fun, but our goal is to point campers to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so we try to integrate Christ in everything that we do, whether it's a ropes course activity or whether it's shooting a BB gun, riding a horse, swimming, rafting, those kind of things. Those are all great experiences, but those are also done in community with other folks and a chance to look at a counselor and say, hey, how is Jesus displayed in your life? And that counselor gets a chance to speak in the lives of those young kids and say, hey, Jesus is in my heart, and I think you need to know about Jesus, and I want to share what a great life that can be. And that temporary community that we have at Idra Haji, kids come out for a week, they get a chance to pull away from electronics and pull away from all the busyness of life and be able to just listen to chapel speakers and sing songs and have an opportunity to let the Holy Spirit work in their heart.
Now, I know that typically we think about camp, we think about summer camp, but Camp Idra Haji has activities, well, all year round. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We obviously have summer camp, and then we also do an outdoor education program. So we have many schools that come up in the fall and spring season where we teach different things like pioneer studies or animal habitats, mountain ecology. And there again, we try to tie in Christ to those lessons as well and be able to use his creation to point them to him.
Now, before you became the executive director, you served as sort of in a number of different capacities at Camp Idra Haji. I mean, you were the Mountain Lab School Assistant, the Narrow Way Expedition Supervisor, Operations Director, I guess Chief Bottle Wash. I mean, did you ever cook in the cafeteria? I'm just teasing you a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is I came as an intern to Idra Haji back in 96, and over time just moved into different roles and have been blessed to be there for a long time.
Wow.
It's been a neat growing experience for me.
Well, speaking of that, I know that praise the Lord, lots of people are participating at Camp Idra Haji, but talk about some of the needs that you have. I mean, I know that we talked a little bit off air that one of the things that you're looking for is hopefully, prayerfully, competent, Christ-honoring young men and women, maybe even not so young men and women, who have a heart for and a desire to minister to young people. Tell us what you're looking for and how people might be able to get in touch with you.
Sure. Yeah, we hire approximately 100 staff every summer for that season. And we're looking for guys and gals that are 17 years old and graduated from high school or up to be able to step in roles of things like being a camp counselor and being in a teepee or a cabin and getting to really be hands-on with as far as speaking into the lives of those kids. But we're also looking for nurses and cooks and wranglers and just lots of different things that we have going on. And we need staff to help support all those things, you know, like pottery and arts and crafts. And so those roles, we've got some great folks in some of those roles, but we're still looking for more because we typically have about 3,000 kids a summer. And
wow, it's a lot that's of great.
People to really facilitate all the different parts and pieces of that.
So if somebody's listening or there's a mom and a dad or a grandma or a grandpa or people who are listening and they say, I have a son, I have a daughter, who this might be a great fit. Should they just go to idrahaji.org? What would you suggest how they get in touch with you?
Yeah, it's a great question. So yes, if you go to idrahaji.org, there is a button along the top of our website that's called Get Involved, and you click on that, and then there's a button for summer staff, and you can apply right there online and get the process going. And you don't have to fill it all out at the beginning. You can get it started and then come back to it and finish filling it out. And then our staff will follow up with interviews and reference calls and those things and see if it's a good fit for you and a good fit for us. And just looking for folks who just really have a heart for the Lord and want to serve. And we can teach you all the stuff that you need to know other than that and how to fulfill that job.
So we're talking about high school students or high school graduates, but even maybe young people who happen to be at school somewhere. But I noticed that you have a background in biology, so it sounds to me like you're looking for people who love athletics, people who love sports, people who love arts and crafts. I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of different people with a lot of different skill sets that would be a perfect fit for Camp Idra Haji.
Yeah, those are important things. We're also folks who may are going to become a teacher someday. This is great hands-on opportunity for a teacher to be able to get some good skills and how to do management of behavior and be able to just really understand an age group. It's also, you know, psychology majors and ministry majors. If you're looking to go into youth ministry, what a great way to get into an opportunity to spend time with kids and get to work with them in a one-on-one or a one-on-eight kind of environment.
Well, that's great. Well, do you have time to spend with me one more segment? Because I'd like to talk to you a little bit about maybe some of the reasons why camp and camp experiences are wonderful.
Yeah, sure. Love to.
Well, the things that I'm thinking about is, like I said earlier, you know, my pastor, this is a place where you can, well, experience the Lord in a personal way. But I want to talk about building relationships and physical activity and developing and honing lifelong skills and self-sufficiency, all kinds of stuff. This is Gino Gerasi. talking with Mike DeBoer from Camp Idra Haji. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program. Joining me is Mike DeBoer. He's the executive director at Camp Idra Haji. And you can find out more about Camp Idra Haji at Idra Haji. That's IDRAHAJE.org, IdraHaji.org. And Mike, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about what's going on up there and your need for men and women, young men and women, maybe who have just recently graduated from high school. But you said 17 and up, and that they could find out more about job opportunities and camp counseling opportunities and just ministry to young people at IdraHaji.org. Tell us a little bit about how a person can become a camper at Idra Haji.
Sure. Yeah, sure. That as well. Go to our website, idrahaji.org, and we have lots of different options for different kids, ages 6 all the way up through 17. And we run those, basically those age groups almost every week. And so you may have an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 14-year-old. They can all go to camp the same week. And so you click on there, put your age in, and it'll give you the options for those kids and pay a deposit and start the registration process. And I will say our camps fill up. Sometimes we move into waiting lists on different age groups and different weeks. So I would encourage you, if you're interested, to get on and sign up now so that you can get a spot for summer.
Right. And so do you have individual campers, but do you have group campers?
No, everything is open enrollment.
Camp.
So you can come by yourself, or you might say, hey, we're going to get a group of 3 or 4 friends. We might all sign up for the same week and go together as well. But it's not like youth groups come per se as a group and bring the counselor. We have all our own counselors and staff who are trained to care for those needs. And the nice thing is, you know, a kid comes by themselves, they get a chance to make new friends.
Sure.
And sometimes those are lifelong friends. My wife, she went as a camper, and she has a lifelong friend many, many, many years later.
Wow. And, you know, like I was talking about before, I mean, it seems almost cliche to call camp a mountaintop experience. So tell us a little bit about some of the spiritual aspects of the camp and encouragement as you're having fun, but how does the subject of having a right relationship with God and Christ come up? How does that happen?
Sure. So every day we have 2 different chapel sessions. And we'll bring in a speaker who gets to share different things about the Bible. And our theme this summer is Let Him Be Known. And we're kind of focusing on Elijah and how that ties in with John the Baptist and Christ. And so the speakers will be talking in the morning and the evening. And then there's also times for personal devotions. And the counselors will facilitate discussion. But it's an opportunity to dig deep into the Bible. And we're a non-denominational camp. And so we dig in the Bible. We want to talk about Jesus, and that's our goal. It's not about this stance or that stance. It's more about, let's talk about Jesus and what he can mean to you. And that happens, like I said, twice a day. It's a great opportunity for kids to come unplugged from media and really get a chance to be in his creation and explore those thoughts and have those thoughts of what does that mean in their life.
Well, I know that you have labs and activities and perhaps some physical activities. Talk a little bit about that. And also, maybe, do you have a special program for kids with special needs or who might have physical restrictions, but they would love to have a camp experience?
Sure. We have lots of different activities. We have climbing towers and ropes courses and rappelling, you know, 150-foot rappelling rock. We do arts and crafts and archery, lots of just different big group games where everybody gets a chance to play capture the flag and that kind of stuff. And so a lot of those activities are going on all the time. And we have a really nice gymnasium. to be able to do things even if the weather's bad. And as far as, you know, some of those special needs, we're not set up as a special needs camp. But what we've been able to do is on a case-by-case basis, be able to evaluate and parents call in and say, hey, this is where we're at. We try to see, you know, certainly our goal, but sometimes we can and sometimes we can't, and we just want to be honest with you about that. And, you know, do the best we can.
And so when it comes to planning your camp experience, do moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas come with the camper and they work together to come up? I suspect you have day camps and maybe overnight camps, and that they might vary in length and time.
Actually, all of our camps are overnight camps.
Okay.
And they're week long. So other than we have a 6 to 8 year old camp, and then we call it Pioneer Camp. And that is usually like three nights, like Sunday to Wednesday, okay, or Wednesday to Saturday. But the rest of them are Sunday through Saturday. And so you're with a specific, your age group. So whether it's 7 to 9 year old, 9 to 12, 13, you know, 11 to 13 or 14 to 17. And those camps are all kind of individuals. We have 5 kitchens and 5 facilities on site. And so parents would come, or grandparents would come and drop their kids off on Sunday and bring them to their camp, get to see their cabin or their teepee, whatever they're going to be staying in. And they would drop them off and wave goodbye and come back on Saturday morning and hear about all the great stories from the week. And that's a great opportunity for those kids to just learn some independence. When they're at camp, you know, they've got to be able to take care of themselves to some extent. And it's really builds confidence in those kids to be able to kind of be away.
So let's talk a little bit about, again, your needs. I suspect, sure, that you have special, not as far as young men and women who are working at the camp, maybe somebody's getting ready, they're home for summer vacation from school, they have an opportunity. What kind of a commitment are you looking for perhaps over the summer? And are there short-term jobs available at Camp Hydrohaji, and maybe even longer-term jobs for people who, like you, love camp, the outdoors, and might want to make it a career, if you will?
So in the summer, it's an 8-week summer camp program, and we like to get folks to be able to come for that whole time. Because obviously we spend a couple weeks of training or a week and a half of training and get them all ready, and it's great for them to be able to kind of get into that rhythm and be able to be there. But sometimes folks say, hey, I can only come and help out for 4 weeks, and we'd love to still have you apply for that as well, because we're always trying to slot folks in and be able to fill in those spaces. And if you're one of those folks who is an extrovert and loves hanging out with kids, is we've got some great counseling opportunities. But other folks are like, hey, I'm more behind the scenes, and we still have opportunities for that too. And or maybe you're a nurse and you're saying, hey, I can give a week. Mm-hmm. You know, we can definitely use you, because we like to have several nurses on site with all that's going on. And you know, give us a call and see if that might work for you. And as far as long-term, a couple options. We do have an internship program where we hire 12 interns every year, and they typically start in August, and then they go all the way through the following August. In that program, they are getting experience in teaching classes, outdoor education classes. They're getting certifications in things like wilderness first aid and different, like, Habitat for Humanity, or not, like Project Wet, Project Wild, Learning Tree, different courses like that, Leave No Trace, and they get a lot of great experience there. And then they jump into the summer program and do some different roles there. It might be leadership roles, or it might be our adventure staff, where they're taking kids out backpacking and rock climbing and those things. And
very cool.
And then we are always looking for full-time folks. Year-round, we typically have about 15 to 18 full-time staff, whether that's cooking or maintenance or jumping into our summer program team and supporting in that way. We're always looking for people to help out there too.
Well, Mike DeBoer, thanks for being my guest. And again, if people want to know more, they can go to idrahaji.org, idrahaji.org. Hey, have fun. I guess your life is like nothing but nonstop fun. Thanks. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Thank you.
This is Gino Geraci. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me. The number's 303-873-1935 if you'd like to join me on the program. 303-873-1935. It comes as no surprise that Donald Trump and Joe Biden were the big winners in Super Tuesday yesterday. And again, if you want to talk about that, happy to take your call, 303-873-1935, and happy to take your calls about Bible questions or about, well, worldviews or questions about world religions. So happy to do all of that. 303-873-1935, the Wall Street Journal, of course, reporting that Nikki Haley suspended her Republican presidential primary bid. A number of other outlets have reported on that. She won Vermont yesterday and the District of Columbia. It was very, very interesting that Nikki Haley would win the District of Columbia and lose her home state. The former president won every other primary. It would appear that he has every possibility of clinching the Republican nomination by this time on Tuesday. So, again, if you want to join me on the program, it's 303-873-1935. That's the number. I have open lines. And by the way, if you've ever wanted to call in on the program, now would be a great time to do that. 303-873-1935. The president, Joe Biden, won every Democratic delegate thus far, except for American Samoa, where there was a guy named Jason Palmer who won three of its six delegates last night. And he's poised to clinch the party's nomination on March 19th. And so win, lose, or draw, barring some catastrophe, Joe Biden or Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States. And of course, as far as political views, how you're going to approach that election is probably going to be the subject of much conversation in the weeks and months ahead. And Jim Dennison at ChristianHeadlines.com basically trying to capture the sentiment that most people have about the election said, you want our nation to elect the person who will most likely advance what you consider to be our best future. I love that single sentence. We want to elect the person who will most likely advance what we consider to be our best future. And so imagine if you're asking that question, which of these candidates are most likely to advance our best future? Well, you have to ask and answer the question, what do you think that future should look like? Should it be, well, open or closed borders? Should it be fiscally responsible? Should it be morally comprehensible? And of course, if you're like most human beings, you're going to think about the collective good through the prism of your own personal worldview of what you think is good for everyone. And so that's interesting in and of itself. 303-873-1935. That's the number. And again, Jim Dennison notes, he says, in one sense, this arrangement is as it should be. In another, it contains the seeds of our own national demise. Imagine you're a person disconnected from God, uninformed biblically, and so it makes perfect sense that you would vote for the candidate who is most likely to represent your own views. And again, part of the challenge that we have is this ever-increasing dilemma. I think all Christians should vote. And I think that they should vote according to their conscience and their understanding of biblical issues. But I also would caution that a political solution is probably not going to come anytime soon. I've been talking a lot about George Barna and the American Worldview Inventory and the headlines that he wrote about just a few days ago, where he says that new research shows deep fragmentation. The United States needs spiritual renewal, not political majority. And then he made the statement that I found stunning, because he said, in fact, we're so divided to the point where I believe Americans have lost the capacity to develop a united perspective on who America is and how we will move forward together. This is, I think, evidenced even in the slogan of Make America Great Again. You have to ask and answer the question, well, what makes America great? Imagine there are people who suggest that America was never great. But 303-873-1935. Let's see who's up. Is it Star? Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. My question is, there's a lot of news feeds that are coming across my phone and just different places that I'm hearing this idea of Christian nationalism and saying, like, what are, you know, should Christians be holding? Like, so I guess what I'm not sure about is this idea of, like, should Christians go into looking into serving in political governmental office type environments?
Yes. What a great question. Just let's pause on that just for a moment.
Okay.
And just for a moment, as you pause on that, here's what I would ask. Why would Christians be the one group of people whose voice or influence should be left out of the public square?
Well, I even wonder, like, why are we even defining a people as that? Why can't you just be a person who wants to, you know, run for political office and serve your country with your values as part of who you are to want to serve? But there's this idea of this Christian nationalism, and I'm not even sure I understand exactly what
that means.
Identify.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a meme and a dog whistle. As it's a way of saying, Christians, please do not participate in the process. My view is, why not? Why would the Christian voice be the one voice that cannot be a part of the process? The other thing that I would point out in the Bible, Joseph is involved in the politics of Egypt. Daniel is involved in the politics of Babylon. It isn't for everybody, but God, I think, does call certain people at certain times. And perhaps there are people who need to serve for such a time as this.
But they're suggesting that and I know you got to go, but they're suggesting
hold on. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I was talking with Star, and Star wanted you to be able to finish your thoughts on, you know, we were asking, there's so much to talk about, but I wanted to focus on this idea of should a Christian run for political office. And I offered the idea that why should a Christian's view be the one unacceptable view in the public square?
Right. I guess, I never even thought about it before until I heard this terminology of Christian nationalist. And what I was reading was that it was implying that even our forefathers never intended, when they talked about, you know, freedom of, you know, coming over and having freedom of religion, that it wasn't intended that that it was for all religions, not just to have the freedom to exercise their own Christian beliefs in as their religion that they are choosing. I'm not sure if I'm clearly stating my question, but it sounded like they were trying to take a Christian nationalism and saying even the forefathers isn't what they intended it to be specific to Christianity, but it was like a global thought. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
Well, I think it's safe to say that when the founding fathers got together and they used the term religion, they were talking about the Christian religion. They weren't talking necessarily about Catholicism or Protestantism or Episcopalianism. So in that sense, I think broadly speaking, they were talking about and they wouldn't have used the term worldview, but they would have used terms where when even in the opening documents of, you know, of our founding documents, we the people, and we're endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights, that rights, human rights and human dignity come from God. And when they were talking about God, they were talking about the God of the Bible. Now, that doesn't mean that they're so to your point, when they said, does a person have the right to believe in the God of the Bible or believe in no God at all? Well, I think that they would have said, of course they do. They have the right to believe in God or no God at all. And then they would have asked about moral sensibility. In other words, the way we relate to one another in the common good. They'll use expressions like that. They'll use expressions of how we're to relate to one another and then how we're to conduct ourselves among ourselves. And I think they draw from biblical principles. But again, when we're talking about when certain people are talking about Christian nationalism, they're reluctant to define what they mean by that. For some people, Christian nationalism is the belief that if you believe that rights, human rights, come from God, you're a Christian nationalist. I don't think that's fair. Because that isn't what a Christian nationalist is. But most Christians believe that human dignity and human rights come from God, not from the government.
Right.
And so I think it's different. I think what they're doing is they're basically saying, well, there are Christians who want their view of morality to serve as the basis of civilization. So imagine you have this view that you believe marriage is between a man and a woman. At the founding of our country, that wasn't an absurd notion. But now in the current climate, it's an absurd notion to a majority of Americans. Imagine at the beginning of our country, if the founding fathers said these women want to kill their unborn child, what do you suppose their response would be?
That's
barbaric. That's barbaric. They would have said that's barbaric. They wouldn't have said we're Christian nationalists and you should keep your baby because we're Christian nationalists. So I think we're back to what I talked about with George Barna, where we ask and we answer the question, well, again, we're so deeply divided, we are incapable of even parsing together a definition of, well, who are we? who are we as a country? How will we move forward as a country? Are there any minimum standards that everyone can embrace? And I think that hopefully from a minimum standard point of view, you might say, well, is order preferable to chaos? Is law preferable to lawlessness? How did we even get to this place? So to the broad question, I think so if we ask and we answer the question, is it okay for a Christian to love their country and be patriotic?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but if you do, are you a Christian nationalist? So imagine
Not necessarily.
This is my point. So imagine there are people who say, we hate America and we want to tear down America in the sense of we don't want a constitutional government. We want a pure democracy. And my view is our founding fathers never wanted a pure democracy. That's why we have a president, a legislature, and a judiciary. We have what's called a constitutional republic. We don't have a democracy in the purest sense of the world where the majority rules. We have a kind of a government where there is a majority, a way of going forward, but there's also respect and availability for minority views. So imagine you live in Wyoming, okay? And more people live 1 mile from Wadsworth Boulevard in Colorado than the entire state of Wyoming, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Wyoming has two senators. Colorado has two senators. New York and California and Texas have 30, 40, 50 million people. It's much, much larger than Wyoming. Why should Wyoming have as many senators in the Senate as any other state? Because they wanted representative government
equal
from a state standpoint. There was an equality among states. Mm-hmm. And so again, that's a great big question. The great big question is, well, what kind of a government is going to lead, if you will, to human flourishing and provide a maximum amount of freedom and a minimum amount of chaos? And so that's the challenges that we face right now. And so, so when we talk about, you know, what does the Bible say about nationalism? What does the Bible say about Christian nationalism? The Bible doesn't address that issue. The Bible says that human beings should be submissive to the government, but they were living in a government where that wasn't even an option. So imagine you're in North Korea or China. Christians can't necessarily participate in the political realm. Here we can, but maybe not forever, huh?
Well, if you're gonna call that out as something specific to a group, then to say I want to run for office and be have a voice, but my voice comes from my values,
right?
That happen to be Christian. That's
right.
Be like something to be pointed out. That's
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.